pray, Lord, you will bless this church and guide it. Open their hearts to your will. There's much going on in the world today, Lord, and without your guidance, we will fail. This, Lord, we pray in your precious name. Amen. The Bible says that a mixed multitude left Egypt with the children of Israel. Who were they? And why did they go with God's chosen people? Some were people of mixed birth, people who had at least one of their forebears who descended from Abraham. There were others who went up from Egypt with them who were also classed as part of the mixed multitude, people who had seen the power of the God of heaven, the God of the Hebrews. Some were slaves who took advantage of this opportunity to escape their overseers. Others were Egyptians who got carried away in the excitement and joined the Israelites as they left Egypt. Most of these people regretted their choices later. In Patriarchs and Prophets on page 281, we read, as they went out, about 600,000 on foot that were men besides children, and a mixed multitude went up with them. In this multitude were not only those who were actuated by faith in the God of Israel, but also a far greater number who desired only to escape from the plagues, or who had followed in the wake of the moving multitude merely from the excitement and curiosity. This class were ever a hindrance and a snare to Israel. The mixed multitude were considered outsiders by the children of Israel. In fact, the word translated mixed multitude can also be translated as riffraff, hoi polloi. They could only be accepted into the tribes of Israel after three generations of marriage into Israel. Until then, they had to live on the outskirts of the camp and were required to obey the laws of God. Each tribe had an assigned place to set up their tents. The Levites were to camp around the tabernacle of the testimony. To the east, Issachar and Zebulun. To the south, Reuben, Simeon, and Gad. To the west, Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin, and to the north the tribes of Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. On the outskirts of the camp, camped the mixed multitude. In the event of an attack on the camp, the mixed multitude would give the camp time to rally. It is for these reasons that there were hard feelings on their part. They were part of the camp, but with no say in how they were to live their lives. Strange place to be. Most of us like to have some say in what happens around us, what we are doing. They didn't have much say. These were people who didn't know the God of Abraham, people who were brought up worshiping idols of stone and wood, gods that they could see and touch. They didn't understand this God of Israel. We read of the golden calf in Exodus chapter 32, verse 1. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people assembled about Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us a God who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." When Moses went up on the mountain and stayed for 40 days, these people felt that Moses had deserted them, that God had deserted them. So they remembered the gods of Egypt, gods that they could see and touch, gods that they could actually put the words in their mouth. These were people who led the Israelites astray in the matter of the golden calf. There was no excuse for the children of Israel and follow them. But also, after seeing what God could do, there was no excuse for the mixed multitude either. they would ever be as wolves in sheep's clothing, leading Israel astray. Moses and God had not deserted them. These people didn't know God enough to have faith. So they fell back on what they understood, a dumb idol. Again in Patriarchs and Prophets, but this time on page 315. During the period of waiting, there was a time for them to meditate upon the law of God, which they had heard, and to prepare their hearts to receive further revelations that he might make to them. They had none too much time for their work. And had they been thus seeking a clear understanding of God's requirements and humbling their hearts before him, they would have been shielded from temptation. But they did not do this and soon became careless, inattentive, and lawless. Especially was this the case with the mixed multitude. They were impatient to be on their way to the land of promise, the land flowing with milk and honey. It was on condition of obedience that the godly land was promised them. But they had lost sight of this. There were some who suggested a return to Egypt. The masses of the people were determined to wait no longer for Moses. Feeling their helplessness in the absence of their leader, they turned to their old superstitions. The mixed multitude had been the first to indulge in murmuring and impatience, and they were the leaders in the apostasy that followed. In the book of Numbers, we read that the people complained about the rough road and about the food they were given. In Numbers chapter 11, verse 1, "Now when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it, and his anger was aroused. So fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some in the outskirts of the camp." The mixed multitude camped on the outskirts of the camp. What were they to think? It seemed that every time God got angry, they were the ones to suffer. They had learned better, but they would always like someone else to take their blame. Therefore, they blamed God and Moses. Friends, there's a mixed multitude in the church today, wolves in sheep's clothing, people who wish to lead God's people astray, to cause them to doubt God, people who only complain. They want something or everything their own way, or they won't play. Let me tell you that the love of God is not play, it's life itself. God is calling each of us. All we have to do is take heed and listen. A few minutes ago, we were watching that video from the General Conference. This has been going on for a number of years now. There's been a group in the church who were pressing for ordination, not only of women. It started with, believe it or not, the lesbians just outside of Washington, D.C., and moved on to some gay men. They want to be ordained, and yet they want to continue to practice their ways. Now it's moved on to those who want to be politically correct. They don't understand that to follow God is not always politically correct. Sometimes it's hard. It has caused heartache and trouble around the world. When the church meets in general council and they make a decision, it's God's decision. But these people want to tell the world, "We know what we got to do and we'll lead you and you're going to follow us." It's not politically correct to follow them. Let's move on to Patriarchs and Prophets, page 377. After 3 days' journey, open complaints were heard. These originated in the mixed multitude, many of whom were not fully united with Israel and were continually watching for some cause of censor. The complainers were not pleased with the direction of the march. They were continually finding fault with the way in which Moses was leading them, though they well knew that he, as well as they, was following the guiding cloud. Dissatisfaction is contagious, and it soon spread to the encampment. In Numbers chapter 11, verse 4 through 6, now the mixed multitude were among them, who were among them, yielded to the intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna." So what happened to the people? Again, the people were led astray by the mixed multitude. God gave them flesh that they wanted two different times. The first time was only for a day. This time for a month. But where a little might be good, now God gave them too much. And then he brought a plague on them so that many died. Why? They had been told that there was a way that they were to prepare meat. They were not to eat it with the blood. Here they didn't take time to follow God's instruction to drain the blood. Therefore, the flesh was tainted to them and unclean. They were not to eat it. God knows what is best for us, and is quick to supply our needs. Again, on page 377, again they began to clamor for the flesh food, or the flesh to eat. Though abundantly supplied with manna, they were not satisfied. The Israelites, during their bondage in Egypt, had been compelled to subsist on the plainest and simplest food. But the keen appetite induced by privation and hard labor had made it palatable. Many of the Egyptians, however, who were now among them, had been accustomed to a luxurious diet. And these were the first to complain at the giving of manna just before Israel reached Sinai. The Lord had granted them flesh in answer to their clamor, but it was furnished them for one day. Now was the second time that they wanted flesh food. God gave them flesh only one day. This time God would give it to them for 30 days and make them sick of what they wanted. See, when I was a child, I used to enjoy eating things my father liked. He liked cheese, so I got to the place I liked cheese. And one day, I had a little bit of stomach flu, and I was in class, and we went to lunch, and the school that day was serving macaroni and cheese. And I'll tell you, my stomach couldn't stand it, and I didn't want to eat it, and the teacher made me. After it came back up, she understood why. The problem with that is, I had liked cheese at one time. I no longer like cheese, except in one place. And that's on pizza. That's it. I know it's psychological, but we all have our little quirks. When Israel refused to enter the promised land, the murmuring of the mixed multitude up to this time began to bear its fruit. The Hebrews began to doubt their God, even though they had seen with their own eyes in Egypt that God was able to deliver on his promises. And he definitely is. We read of the people murmuring against God and Moses. Again, the murmuring of the mixed multitude bore fruit in the tribe of Israel. In Numbers chapter 21, verses 4 through 9. Then they set out from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the people became impatient because of the journey. And the people spoke against God and Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and water, and we loathe this miserable food. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people. So the people of Israel died. So the people came to Moses and said, "We have sinned because we have spoken against the Lord and you. Intercede with the Lord that he may remove the serpents from us." And Moses interceded for the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Make a fiery serpent and set it on a standard, and it shall come to about that everyone who is bitten, when he looks at it, he shall live." And Moses made a bronze serpent and set it on a standard, and it came about that if a serpent bit any man, when he looked at the bronze serpent, he lived. The people in the camp had lived with the miracles of God long enough that they began to take them for granted. They felt that they had come this far by their own strength alone. That they could question God. They had evidence of God's care for them, and yet they doubted him. Patriarchs and Prophet, page 429. Because they had been shielded by divine power, they had not realized the countless dangers by which they were continually surrounded. In their ingratitude and unbelief, they had anticipated death to come upon them. The poisonous serpents that infested the wilderness were called fiery serpents on account of the terrible effects produced by their sting. It caused violent inflammation and speedy death. As the protecting hand of God was removed from Israel, great numbers of people were attacked by these venomous creatures. Now, there was terror and confusion throughout the encampment. In almost every tent were the dying and dead. None were secure. Often the silence of the night was broken by the piercing cries that told of fresh victims. All were busy ministering to the sufferers or with agonizing care endeavoring to protect those who were not yet stricken. No murmuring now escaped their lips. When compared to the present suffering, their former difficulties and trials seemed unworthy of thought. Now the people humbled themselves before God and confessed to Moses their sins and asked him to intercede with God for them, that they not all die. Now God's protecting hand covered them. God has given them another chance, just as he gives us another chance. In Numbers 24, we find the story of Balaam. We all know the story, how King Balak asked him to curse the children of Israel, how he had not been able to do so, but only bless. They didn't know that the children of Israel carried the curse in the camp with them in the form of the mixed multitude, people who, given the chance, would live down to the lowest levels, people who were truly wolves in sheep's clothing. In Numbers chapter 25, verse 1 to 5, while Israel remained at Shittim, the people began to play the harlot with the daughters of Moab, for they invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel joined themselves to Baal of Peor, and the Lord was angry against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, take all of the leaders of the people and execute them in broad daylight before the Lord, so that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. So Moses said to the judges of Israel, each of you slay his men who have joined themselves to Baal of Peor. Israel had for so long had the mixed multitude in the camp that when King Balak, at the urging of Balaam, sent the women of Midian into the camp, they didn't perceive the danger that they were in. They were so subtle that they had led the people far down the path to destruction before Moses was even aware of what was happening. Moses had to take hard measures to stamp out this sin of his people, even to the execution of the leaders. But this was not enough. God brought a plague into the camp, which did not stop until Aaron's grandson killed the Israelite man who flaunted the Midianite woman in the camp. The killing was in his zeal to protect the honor of the Lord. He was jealous with the jealousy of the Lord, and this stopped the plague. When Israel came back from the Babylonian captivity, they found people of mixed blood living on their land. These people later became the Samaritans and were ever a thorn in the side of Israel. Remember that when Nebuchadnezzar took Israel captive, he took only those who could be of use to his empire. The rest, those who were uneducated, poor and untrained, he left in Israel. He had no use for them. These people intermarried with the nations around them and were in possession of the land when Israel came back to reclaim their property. And still, they hadn't learned. They married into the nations around them, creating another group of people called a mixed multitude. Even the priests weren't immune to the temptation of their enemies. As we read in Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 1 to 6, where a priest even gave room to the enemy of Israel in the temple, part of the mixed multitude of the people who lived in the neighborhood, lived as neighbors around them. In this verses here, verses 1 through 6. On that day, they read aloud from the book of Moses in the hearing of the people, and there was found written in it that no Amorite or Moabite should ever enter the assembly of God, because they did not meet the sons of Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam against them to curse them. However, our God turned the curse into a blessing. So it came about that when they heard the law, they excluded all foreigners from Israel. Now, prior to this, one of these times I'll learn how to pronounce all these names, Eliashib, the priest who was appointed over the chamber of the house of our God, being related to Tobiah, had prepared a large room for him where formerly they had put the grain offering, the frankincense, the utensils, and the tithes of grain, wine, and oil prescribed for the Levites, the singers and the gatekeepers, and the contribution for the priests. Again, I say, even today, we have a mixed multitude with us. They are part of our church. People who we love, and yet some are as wolves among us. As the mixed multitude had the right to join God's people, to become one with them, today we have the right to join with Jesus. And we don't have to wait 3 generations. When Jesus does it, We don't have to worry about that. He's just waiting for us to turn around and love him. As we were, as we today have the right to join with Jesus, if we but trust him, as they were adopted into Israel, we can be adopted into the family of God. All we have to do is ask and believe. So let's not be wolves in sheep's clothing, but rather be true children of God, loving those that God brings into contact with us every day. Let us remember that the church, there are no strangers, only family members we haven't met yet. As for the mixed multitude among us, Jesus set the example of how we are to treat them when he talked to the woman at the well. He accepted her as she was, a sinner, but also a child of God. He sees the heart, and he is ever able to work with the wolves among us. So if Jesus can love them, can we do less? I don't think so. Our closing hymn this morning is found on 608 in your hymnal. Faith is the victory.